This episode of Talk of Alaska is brought to you in part by Alaska at Work, an American graduate getting to work initiative made possible by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
It's graduation time for high school seniors across the state. After celebrating the achievement, graduates must then decide whether to get a job or continue pursuing coursework for additional training. Some choose to apply to colleges or universities right away. Some take a year off. Others take another route into technical or trade school. What are the options? Exploring higher education is our discussion today on Talk of Alaska.
Support for Alaska Public Media comes from Alaska Air Cargo, committed to serving the shipping needs of 19 Alaska communities with connections to more than 100 destinations. More information at alaskacargo.com.
The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters.
Hello, it's Talk of Alaska. I'm Lori Townsend. Planning for the future is exciting and more than a little daunting. What's the right career path and how much will it cost to get the education needed? How can you know at 18 if you'll still like your job at 40? Increasingly, the jobs of the future will require more than a high school diploma. But what if you can't afford a four-year university education, or you learn better through hands-on education rather than textbooks? Technical college is one option for people who want to get into the trades like welding, carpentry, mechanics, or simply want to be employed sooner than waiting for a more traditional degree. There are a variety of pathways to get direct training and land a good job. Here to discuss some of them are Denise Runge. Denise is the Dean of UAA's Community and Technical College. Hello, Denise.
Good morning.
Thanks so much for being here. Also in the studio is Missy Fraze. Missy is the Acting Director of Career and Technical Education for the Anchorage School District. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
You can also join our conversation. Are you a recent graduate? If so, congratulations. Are you trying to decide what comes next? Or are you a parent wondering what you should advise for your kids' advanced education? Are you interested in a technical education program or apprenticeship? Give us a call statewide, 1-800-478-8255. That's 1-800-478-8255. If you're in Anchorage, the number is 550-8422, 550-8422. You can also email us talk@alaskapublic.org. So Denise, let's start out with kind of an overview. What programs does the Technical College at UAA provide, and how does this education track differ from the traditional university route?
Yeah, that's a great question. So UAA's Community and Technical College has probably 12 different pathways, everything from culinary arts and hospitality administration to aviation, which includes maintenance, air traffic control, professional piloting, and aviation administration. We have construction management, occupational safety and health, architectural engineering technology, computer and networking technology, automotive, diesel, and welding. So it's a full slate, and all of our programs are tied to jobs in Alaska. And that's really key for us. Anytime we consider a program, starting something new, our first step is to say, what are the jobs in Alaska now? What are the projections from the Department of Labor and others as far as what the need will be for these jobs in the future? What's different about this from another four-year path, for example, is we have a lot of shorter-term programs. We have 1 year, 2 year, and some 4 year.
So talk a little about, you mentioned the Department of Labor and looking at what they're projecting. How else do you decide what should be next? How do you design training, and what other research do you use to sort of inform where you should go next for technical training?
We get our information from a variety of places. I mean, for one thing, we have strong partnerships with Anchorage School District and the Matsu Borough Schools. So we're in conversation with the people who are educating the young people and sending them our way. But we're also, for every single one of these programs, we've formed what we call our program advisory committees. And these are working professionals, people who are in the industry currently, and they meet on a regular basis and talk to us and talk to our faculty about what it is that they're looking for. When they hire our graduates, they give us the feedback of, are there any gaps in the training that we're providing? Is there something that we're doing particularly well? And maybe there's something that they see coming down the pipeline, and they'll try to give us that heads up and say, hey, you know, we're doing it this way now, but we're hearing, you know, for example, in computer and networking technology, we're hearing a ton from the Anchorage Technology Forum about all the things that need to happen in terms of cybersecurity and thinking across the different disciplines that relate to information technology.
If you're just joining us, this is Talk of Alaska, and today we are talking about the trades, workforce development for Alaska, and different career paths that students can decide to go down if they don't feel that they can afford, or that the university track just might not be the route that they want to take. Then there are other options. We're discussing those. Also, I know that some people go back to school. They might start right off working somewhere and decide they want more training. And so later on in their career, they may go back to community or technical college. And we have the dean of University of Alaska Anchorage's Community and Technical College here, Denise Runge. And also in the studio is Missy Fraze. Missy is the acting director of career and technical education for the Anchorage School District. You can join us if you'd like at 1-800-478-8255. That's statewide, 1-800-478-TALK. If you're in Anchorage, the number is 550-8422, 550-8422. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. Missy, you work with high school students. When should students start thinking about their future careers in earnest? I imagine that's not their senior year.
No, most definitely not their senior year. And actually, as young as fifth grade, students start deselecting what they want to do, whether that's...
So you mean what they don't want to do.
What they don't want to do. And it might not be a choice based on experience. It might be somebody told me I shouldn't do that. So we actually began exposing students to career opportunities as early as sixth grade in career and technical education. We have programs in all 10 middle schools with our CTE, and we have technology, we have family consumer science, we have arts and AV communications. We have a variety that begins in middle school to really start exposing students to what's next. And if I decide on something, how do I put myself on a path to get there? And so we begin that in sixth grade and work all the way through high school. We have career and technical education programs in every single high school in the district, as well as at King Tech High School. And so we're continuously working with students on developing what their plan is after they graduate.
So you start in fifth grade with what? I mean, how much is there in the fifth grade class setting? Is it just sort of, here are some options? Or
A lot of times it's just connecting industry into the classroom. Maybe you're doing a math unit with money, and you bring in somebody from the industry, the banking industry, to come in and just talk about what they do. And it's those small exposures to different community members who can connect to the learning in the classroom. And so it's minimal, but connected to the learning. And then as they get into CTE classes, which Career and Technical Education, that's our acronym for it, is CTE. When they get into that classroom, then we start doing more community and industry investment. They might come in and do a lesson with the students and spend all the day teaching a lesson. Or we take students out on field trips. We have at Romig Middle School, the family consumer science teacher over there takes her students down to Benihana, and they get to do work with our community partners, Benihana, and The students learn a little bit about the industry there. And so there's lots of ways we can begin exposing students in sixth, fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth grade.
The career and technical education information page states, "We believe that learning should be personalized and flexible, and all students should be empowered to choose a meaningful education and career." What does this mean? How is the training personalized?
It's by giving them the options and helping students find something they're passionate about, whether that's welding, engineering, something in the medical field. It's helping them find something they're passionate about and then giving them the guidance to continue down that path. And if that leads to direct entry into the workforce, to apprenticeships, to a post-secondary program, whatever that learning needs to pathway needs to be for that individual student. And today, I think it's really important that that success isn't measured by your level of educational attainment. A four-year degree might be a right for one student because that's their goal. But if another student has a career goal that doesn't require a four-year degree, they're no less of a success in our eyes than the student whose career goal required a four-year degree. And I think that's the important part of personalizing it for students is valuing their choice and helping them get there.
It reminds me of conversations I had with my own sons about when they would argue with each other about going to college or going directly to work. And whatever you're going to do, digging a ditch or being a professor is fine as long as you're making an honest living. That was my criteria. Just make sure you're doing this the right way. How, and Denise, maybe this is a good spot for you to jump in here. This idea of personalizing and kind of being flexible about the training, how does this mesh, though, with the realities of an actual job site where there may be multiple demands and deadlines and maybe a not so personal or flexible foreman? How do you prepare people for that?
That's a really good point. And in fact, it's one of the things that we do constantly tweak and constantly work on. We, for example, will really stress in the Community and Technical College at UAA, we really stress internships. A lot of our students are engaged in the work as they're learning. So for example, our culinary arts program runs both a restaurant and a bakery cart. People are often unfamiliar with the fact that there's a fine dining restaurant that's open only for lunch and only part of the semester in the middle of UAA's campus in Lucy Cuddy Hall. But it is there, and it is a working experience, and the students have to buy the food, help plan the menus, serve the food, cook the food. Anything that we can do like that to give them a realistic expectation while they're learning is something that we're really pursuing. And then, as Missy mentioned, we're also really interested in apprenticeships and working with employers to find ways to connect apprenticeship to educational credits.
Mm-hmm. Can, for both of you, define what's really meant by technical education and how that kind of separates, is a separate path from what would be considered a more, and I hate to use the word traditional because I think all of these pathways are traditional to whoever's in them, but how does technical education definition differ from university and other four-year programs?
I think that it's not an entirely clear definition at the post-secondary level. It is very amorphous. So the Community and Technical College actually offers six baccalaureate degrees in addition to all these associates and certificates and alternative pathways. So really what it's about is the underlying theories and processes and knowledge. So like any other university, UAA is organized into these colleges where knowledge is sort of similar. And what holds the CTC programs together, if you will, is that they all rely on a strong hands-on component. And they are all very career-focused, all leading to immediate employment at the end. And so if we think about that as the definer, the word technical isn't the greatest way to get that message across, but it is the traditional way to say it.
Mm-hmm. Anything to add, Missy?
You know, it's similar in the secondary, middle and high school. Really, we're opening doors to many opportunities for students, and whether that is into direct entry into work or into an apprenticeship or into a post-secondary program. And really, career and technical education is an evolution of what was once vocational education, and aligning to one of the career clusters. And we have programs in our district that align to four-year degree programs at the university. We have engineering programs, and it's articulated, and students can transition into UAA's College of Engineering and have up to 12 university credits already in their pocket. But in the same token, we have programs that align with occupational endorsements, and we have programs that align with two-year degrees.
You can join our conversation if you have questions about the pathways that are available through the trades, through technical training, both at the high school level and at the college university level. You can join us at 1-800-478-8255 statewide. That's 1-800-478-8255. In Anchorage, the number is 550-8422. 550-8422. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. And that's something that Tom did. Tom in Fairbanks sent an email, and he says, other states have a community college system with lower tuition and fees. In Alaska, those types of courses are offered through UA, but charge the same tuition as regular UA courses. This may be a good deal compared to other four-year institutions, but isn't compared to community colleges in other states. Should Alaska lower the cost for those wanting vocational types of courses, or to try out college with less financial pressure? Denise?
Well, in fact, the university system has done just that on a small number of courses. So I guess about a year ago, we launched the CTE tuition discount, and that applies to all the classes that are taken in any of our occupational endorsements. So these are the short-term, absolutely career-focused training, not only in the community and technical college, but there's a number of them in, for example, the College of Health that lead to direct employment in the health industry. And so for any course that was part of one of those occupational endorsement paths, the tuition was discounted 25%. That doesn't get us quite as low as some of those community college systems in the lower 48, but it definitely is a big help. And it's just exactly as the person writing the email suggested. It's to give them an opportunity to get that training or try it out in a less expensive way.
Just test drive a career path.
Test drive a career.
Let's talk a little bit about the demographics for students who might be gravitating toward this type of education. Missy, let's start with you. At the high school level, what do you see young men, young women, who, and why are they coming to you and talking about these different ideas for education?
Really, I think in our enrollment, we see about a 50-50 split between males and females across our programs. Different programs will have higher numbers of males, pardon me, and some will have higher numbers of females based on a traditional occupation. But students, it depends on the program, but a lot of students gravitate towards career and technical education because of its hands-on, its applied learning. When we do math in our construction electricity, there's trigonometry in there. There's difficult math in there, but it's all applied. They're learning through a craft, and so they find success in that style of learning. And they want to continue that because it makes sense to them. And that's what we see is those lights go on and, oh, I get it now. And that's where we see a lot of students succeeding. And then other students who have identified a pathway as an opportunity to their next step. And they see that as, if I take these courses, it leads to this. And that's why they're engaged in taking the career and technical education classes.
Are you seeing shifts? I don't know how long you've been doing this, but are you seeing shifts in, you said 50-50 split, young men and young women, but are you seeing a change in, especially in what may have been considered more traditional pathways for young men into welding or mechanics or or construction? Are there more young women who are deciding, hey, I don't want to work in a lower paying job? So I know that when I was a young single parent with two young sons, I went to welding school because I thought I need to make money. And so that's what I did. I went to vocational school and had to support my love of journalism through other methods for quite a while.
Right.
So do you see a shift in who is going toward these, what may have been considered more traditionally male paths?
Not as much as we would like to see, but we're making efforts to engage what is called non-traditional students. So that could be a female into a male-dominated industry. And just this semester, this school year, we had a female in our welding program at King Tech High School, and she was phenomenal, and she earned multiple AWS certifications and was the top student in that program. And her and a couple of other female students at King Tech in non-traditional programs created a video with our AV, our film and audio program, trying to inspire other female students to dare to be different and pursuing your passions. And I think the more we do that, especially at a younger age, and build confidence in students in non-traditionals, and not to feel that just because you don't see other males or other females in this industry that you shouldn't be a part of it. And whether that's males going into the nursing field or that's females going into the construction industry, we want to build that confidence that that's okay to be different and you'll still be successful. And we even, this last fall, brought in a Kayleen McCabe. She's a advocate for the trades across the U.S. And we had an event at King Tech High, and we had some female students up from AvTech, and they were really inspired by her words because they were all in non-traditional fields. They were in welding, and they said, man, this is really hard. But her words inspired them to continue to push down that road, even though there's a lot of difficulties.
And Denise, how, the same question to you. What do you see as far as demographics coming into your programs, and how has that changed?
If it has.
It has. And the demographics are very similar to what is happening in the high school. We really have a variety of demographic groups that are attracted to the different programs. For whatever reason, the group that's attracted, for example, to the construction management program or the occupational safety tends to be a little bit older, whereas culinary and automotive tend to attract a little bit younger student. And it may be what they've experienced. It may be that they are already working in an industry at a lower end job, and now they're coming to get the education to kind of plus it up. And definitely on the gender, what we're finding is increasingly, as we have that star female student in welding or in aviation maintenance technology, they tell their friends, and more female students are empowered to try that path. And it's really exciting to see when the whole culture begins to shift, because as we all know, there are ways of knowing and ways of learning that differ among age groups and genders. And so the more diverse student population that we get, the more rich that training environment becomes, because all these different ways of knowing are being brought into the learning process. And it's really a lot of fun for everybody.
Mm-hmm. 1-800-478-8255 is the number to call statewide if you'd like to join our conversation, if you have questions or comments. Maybe you have experience yourself in one of these fields and could offer some advice for students who are trying to figure out what's next. 1-800-478-8255, or in Anchorage, the number is 550-8422. 550-8422. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. Paul is on the line from Palmer. Hi, Paul.
Hi, Larry. See, I've worked as a job coach for individuals with disabilities up until age 21, and I was wondering what the community college's recruitment, retention, and placement is rates are for people with disabilities in the college, and then women with disabilities and people of color with disabilities. Just a rough ballpark would be helpful. I'm curious.
Sure.
Thanks, Paul.
Thank you for your call. Yeah, we work really hard, actually, to make sure that all the services that someone that brings any kind of disability with them to the university, that we are meeting those needs, and we accommodate those needs in a variety of ways. So I really don't have any hard numbers, but I do know, for example, just thinking through some of our programs, we have some students with physical disabilities in one that I know of in culinary. I know of a couple in the aviation areas. And it really varies what we need to do to support that student in their learning path. There's a separate office at the university which helps design that learning experience, the Office of Disability Accommodation. And so we take their advice and guidance and whatever it is that they say we need to do to help that student be successful. That's what we do. There's really only one exception to that, and that would be if an accommodation that might help a student learn would cause a safety issue for that very same student. Mm. And I can only think of one occasion where something like that has come up. And then we negotiate back and forth and say, well, what if we try this path? Or what if we alter things? So it's really a great opportunity for many people who might not think that they can engage in one of these career paths. They actually can with just a little bit of adjustment and help on our part. It's not at all something that we can't do for them, and we're really excited to be able to offer that.
That sounds encouraging, that people shouldn't shy away because they think, well, I'm not going to be able to do this because of whatever their challenge may be physically, with mobility or other things. Missy, I see you nodding quite a bit. Talk a little about that from the high school perspective too, and also the junior high.
Sure. We look at how we serve our students, and we have graduation rates for what's called a concentrator in high school, and that's a student who has taken a sequence of courses in a pathway. So kind of like lining down a path towards some sort of post-secondary option. And students in career and technical education who are concentrators are successful. Our special education students graduate, who are concentrators, their graduation rate's 83%, which is higher than the average special education graduation rate. And those numbers go across the board for us. Our overall graduation rate for CTE concentrators is 93%. And the district's average graduation rate is right about 80%. So we do see that no matter who the student is, when they get involved in career and technical education and they find that passion and that purpose, they're more successful. And we provide all kinds of accommodations for students, always addressing the safety concerns. But we work with students to, you know, whether that's differentiating their learning, providing more supports with students, and to ensure that we're meeting their needs and helping them be successful.
We are going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll continue our conversation about career paths for the future as students are finishing up high school and thinking about what comes next, and also people that might be mid-career and deciding they'd like to take a different path as Talk of Alaska continues statewide.
Funding for Talk of Alaska was made possible in part by the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority and listeners just like you. Thank you.
Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. We're discussing career paths for the future and some alternative routes to the four-year university or college track. There are a lot of different pathways into good-paying, secure jobs that can take maybe only a semester and may take also 4 years, but are different ways of learning that may appeal to some people more than the traditional classroom route for a full 4 years. There's certainly classroom time and technical and vocational training, but there's also a lot of hands-on work, and that's appealing to some people more than the classroom setting. 1-800-478-8255 is the number statewide. 1-800-478-8255. If you're in Anchorage, the number is 550-8422. 550-8422. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. We're talking about the trades and workforce development for Alaska's future. And we have Denise Runge, the dean of UAA's Community and Technical College, in the studio. And also Missy Fraze, the acting director of career and technical education for the Anchorage School District. We have an email from the emeritus chair of the Department of Alaska Native Studies and Rural Development from UAF. This is Jenny Jones, and she says, construction is a career, not just a job. She says, I had a very successful 25-year career in industrial construction as a welder, and then as a welding inspector, and finally as a mechanical inspector before retiring and going into academia. She says, the most important thing we can do in Alaska is train young people to take up trades as careers, not just as jobs, and show them how these careers are respected. Until young Alaskans rise through the ranks and become foremen, general foremen, superintendents, inspectors, we will not be in control of those industries, and we will not have local hire. She says it's not just enough to get them in the gate to a job. There needs to be continuing training and mentoring to rise through the ranks, and this requires industry investment. So let's talk a little bit about the industry's role in this and what type of investment is there. And the point about continuing education, I think, is really important, because it's not, you're not just, okay, I'm done, I got the certification, now here I go. Some of these industries do require continual education and credits toward more training in the future. So, Denise, talk about that segue of industry here.
Yes. I mean, the person who wrote the email makes a fabulous point, because in so many ways, the trades are a career trajectory. Whether that's done through an apprenticeship, whether that's done through training in a regional training center, whether that's done through a university certificate program, that initial training gets you the initial job. And that's a great start, but it's not the end of the story. And in reality, most of these fields do have what are called stackable credentials. And so somebody can come and start with that occupational endorsement, that quick certificate, learn the basic skills, get an entry-level job. Then they can come back in a year or continue on and earn that two-year associate's degree. And that may be good for that mid-level. And then if they want to move into something more advanced, there are these four-year degree options that take all that you've learned already and build that in. It's not starting over and doing another whole 4 years. It's just sometimes an additional year or maybe two added on to what that individual has already done. And I do really appreciate the support of industry. It is so vital because they help higher ed here in Alaska, certainly our programs, in so many ways, from donating amazing equipment that's just gently used and maybe they're replacing it, but to us, it's extremely valuable and still very workable, to providing internships, career opportunities, coming and teaching in our classrooms, providing scholarships. It is truly phenomenal, all of these people who donate their time, their resources, their expertise, just exactly for this purpose, to help people turn these trades into not just a job, but a lifelong career.
And it seems like it's an investment that makes sense for them as well, because then they're getting better trained people and, more critically, locally trained people that already know what life in Alaska is like. So there's potentially less expense in hiring somebody from outside who may come and decide, whoa, I can't hang with this. I have to get out of here after 6 months or something. So it does seem like this is beneficial going both ways to a big degree.
Absolutely.
Let's go back to the phones for a moment. Harry is in Klawak. Hi, Harry.
Good morning. Hey. I just want to comment on the high school kids. You know, they need to get into the water treatment plant and wastewater treatment plant in the state of Alaska that's, like, in demand, you know. And you only have to go to school for, like, 40 hours to get certified. You have to get certified by DEC, but, you know, it's a very good field to get into for... And you're not going into $100,000 debt, you know.
Well, thank you, Harry, for those great comments. And we're going to go to Missy now and let her comment on that high school connection there.
Yeah, thanks, Harry. And that is something, we actually have a fantastic partnership with the Anchorage Water and Wastewater Utility. Mm-hmm. And over at West High School, we have a process technology program that aligns directly to the post-secondary programs at the university and down at KPC, UAF. And we have a partnership where we've actually had interns out of our process technology program at West High School go and intern in Anchorage at both the wastewater and the water treatment facilities, and to showcase those opportunities. And a lot of those operators talk about their career pathway and what got them involved in the industry and why they've stayed in it and how they've grown in the industry over time by stacking those credentials together. And so I'm happy he mentioned that, because we actually have that connection right here in Anchorage.
All right. We are going to stick with the phones for just a moment. Art is in Anchorage. Hi, Art.
Hi there.
Hi.
Hey, so I got a question. So I took a more traditional route of working in shops and outdoors as welder. I have buddies who are metal workers, and they're always working on their CNC machines and kind of on their computers doing stuff, not, you know, real sure what they're doing. But I know what they're making is pretty cool. Can y'all talk about, like, any type of computer-based things or coding or whatnot? And, you know, there's a lot of integrations, I feel, in those types of fields. Just not sure what schools are offering right now for high school or college, vocational type things. Do you have any thoughts about that?
Thanks, Art. Thanks for the question. And, you know, he does raise a really good and interesting point that a lot of even the more mechanical trades of the past, turning lathes and other machines that at one point, you know, you were doing hand measurements, now are all computerized. And you know, it sounds like it might be easier, but you have to know what you're doing to plug the proper measurements in. So who wants to take that question? Do you want to start, Missy?
Sure, I can. I think it'll be a perfect lead to sure. Denise. Is we actually, we begin in middle school. We have fabrication labs in all 10 middle schools. And the students, we have a CNC machine. We have 3D printers in there. We have laser cutters in there. And the students beginning in middle school can start to learn those skills for designing and problem solving. That's a big part of it, is not just using the tool, but understanding how to use the tool to solve a problem. And then in our high school programs at Diamond and Bartlett and South and Eagle River and King Tech, we have same fabrication equipment. And even at East High School, we have a metal fabrication program that just opened up there a couple of years ago. And we have our talent out of there, our instructor came from industry and is now teaching in high school. And Adam brought in, we have a plasma cutter in there, and he has a CNC machine he's going out for training this summer. And so we are doing the integration of those technical tools into our programs to introduce students to the skills that then they can take with them into post-secondary.
Denise.
And very much the same in our programs directly, but also in the engineering programs. There's a lot of this work going on. And at UAA, of course, we have our multiple campuses as well. And so down in Prince William Sound College in Valdez, they've got a millwright program. As Missy mentioned earlier, KPC has the process technology program. So students can take these skills that they're beginning in high school, that they're learning in college, and they can actually branch them off into a number of different but related paths. But you're absolutely right. Everything is computerized, whether it's our automotive maintenance classes, the aviation maintenance classes, the welding, the non-destructive testing. So much of it really involves those critical thinking skills, those math skills to be able to function in these high-tech environments.
Yes, when I was in welding school, it was all about heat and measurements, and there were no computers involved, but I'm sure that the training would be quite different today. You mentioned Valdez. How about other rural areas that have training possibilities for students who live in remote parts of the state? What is the outreach like, and how can they access that from a distance?
I'm so glad you asked me that question, because that's something that we've really been focusing on for the last couple of years. Of course, the universities, the three universities, have a number of campuses, but there's no way in a state like Alaska that we can reach every student. And so at UAA, we're really focusing on figuring out ways to take pieces of the hands-on training, and whether through simulators or partnering with local high schools or regional training providers, find a way to get students those academic credits so that they can get where they need to go. You know, not everybody needs to finish the degree. Some people just need to take four welding classes and earn certain certifications. And the other thing that we're doing is we are putting portions of our training online. It really depends on what it is that we're doing, but certain things can effectively be delivered via video conference or through traditional online class. And so we've really begun to expand our reach there as well. A lot of this work is what they call non-traditional credit. And so that is literally you're learning how to do something in your high school here in Anchorage, for example. And it's so similar to what we teach at UAA that when you arrive at UAA, you present your high school diploma, we see you took that course, and we give you the academic credit for it. Or you went to AvTech or another regional training center or the military. And we can take those trainings that line up with what we do and go ahead and give you the credit and not make you take that same class again.
Mm-hmm. Missy, how do you partner with other schools in other parts of the state to help students in those areas?
One of our newest partnerships that is still in the works is we are working with Lower Yukon School District to have a residential partnership where they will bring students in for 9-week time frames. And during those 9 weeks, we will be doing career and technical education courses for those students to begin to offer pathway development. And there'll be certifications in those courses, and some of them will have dual credit where they can exercise that credit at a post-secondary program. So that's one of the ways. And we are looking at ways that we can also leverage the online learning, but also other ways that we do it is just through sharing of our curricular resources with other directors and other programs. I just was in conversations with Pribilof Island School District and their broadcasting program and their radio station out there that's partnered with their school district. And so I sent them all over all of our curriculum and academic plans to jumpstart their program. And so what resources we have, we share, because not every school district has the same resources that we do in Anchorage, and we certainly don't want to hold those close to our chest. We want to share with districts.
Is there are there partnerships beyond just the school itself in these other communities where maybe if there's a welding shop in a small community that there might be some connections made there so that they can get not only the curriculum remotely, but then they can do that hands-on training in their own community? Is that happening?
In some ways, yeah. There's Excel Alaska is an organization, a nonprofit organization that works with rural school districts for doing the same CTE career and technical preparation with students. And they work with local industry and bring their training to the communities. And so there are partnerships like that that exist.
All right. We are going to take one more quick break. And when we come back, we'll take more phone calls, more questions as we continue our conversation about future career paths for students who are wondering what's next on Talk of Alaska.
Support for Alaska Public Media comes from Alaska Air Cargo. Their new 737 cargo fleet delivers freight to 19 Alaska communities from Prudhoe Bay to Yakutat with reliable on-time service. More information at alaskacargo.com.
All right, welcome back to Talk of Alaska. We are discussing vocational education, technical training, and different careers that are available for students coming out of high school, or maybe they are mid-career and want to change pathways for their future. Mark is in Palmer. Hi, Mark.
Hey, good morning, and thanks for a great show. I'm with the UAF Bristol Bay campus, and I just wanted to make everybody aware that we have a sustainable energy occupational endorsement program. And your guests have done a great job talking about, you know, the challenges of delivering across our huge state, et cetera. But a couple things I just wanted to get out there. Number one, we have this sustainable energy program meant just for what you're talking about, you know, good paying jobs, secure jobs, jobs that can't be outsourced because they're local or regional. And it's kind of the future of energy, right? Energy is connected to everything we do, and I get excited about it. And it connects to the building trades, like weatherization. Fastest growing energy sector jobs in the United States are wind and solar technicians, et cetera. That's not necessarily true right now in Alaska, but we do have a lot of growth going on in those sectors, and also just in building, you know, modernization or weatherization. And there's opportunities all across the state. And as your guests have pointed out, there's always challenges delivering this material, whether it's online or hands-on. Our program is, we do both, but that's one of our big challenges in Alaska is how do we get the information to people who do it? And then I'll just finish by saying we definitely also partner with high school teachers or do what we call dual credit opportunities for high school students in the sustainable energy program. So I just appreciate the material and wanted to let people know there is such a thing. I've had students anywhere from 17 to 80 years old, some of them career changes from, say, the military into clean energy, et cetera. But it's an exciting and it's a growing field.
Wow, I want to meet those 80-year-old students because I love that idea that people are still learning. There's no age limit. That's fantastic. Thanks, Mark. And I would also encourage people like Mark and others, if you've got some information that you can provide by email that we could link to on our website with the Talk of Alaska post for today's program. The audio will be available later today, and if there's some great links, we'll also provide links to the programs that we're talking about today here with UAA and ASD. But please, if there's others that you can think of that we should know about and other folks could benefit from, please send those to talk@alaskapublic.org. We're going to stay with the phones for just a moment. Michael is in Juneau. Hi, Michael.
Hello.
Did you have a question?
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I just said, did you have a question? Sorry.
Well, more of a comment and a question as well. I've been in aviation for 39 years, and I'm seeing from not only a pilot's perspective, but also maintenance, because that's my primary field, where pilots are complaining that, you know, they're losing pilots left and right and not able to attract them into the industry. But there was a study by Boeing, and it studied the impact and loss of aviation technicians. And what it found was, for every pilot that's not being attracted into the industry, there are four technicians that are not being attracted to the industry. And I want to applaud UAA and UAF for their aviation maintenance programs, because I was just up there in December at UAA giving a presentation, and hopefully to hire on people out of the program and come to Juneau and come to work in our, specifically the general aviation and helicopter industry. And what I found was the airlines, the larger companies, are getting them out of the, are picking them off out of the schools, which is fine. I mean, but I think more should be given to the students to be able to see there's more to just aviation than just the airlines. There's a lot of others out there, a lot of other rewarding careers in general aviation and in the helicopter industry. And with the growing, incredibly vastly growing UAV, UAS industry.
Yeah, excellent point. I'm sure that there are. Let's get our guests. Thank you very much, Michael, for those comments. He raises an interesting point and a good point about the fact that beyond the airlines, there's a lot of need throughout Alaska in aviation because we're a big flying state.
Yep, Michael is spot on. And it is so true that we cannot train enough right now for any part of the aviation industry. The airlines are literally in our building trying to recruit our students.
Ready to pounce.
Ready to pounce. Offering signing bonuses, and it's wonderful. I would say to any parents or any young people who may be listening and thinking about a career, boy, the opportunities with aviation are really limitless. And the airlines are not the only game in town. There are lots of opportunities all throughout the state. It is truly a growth opportunity.
And well beyond pilots.
Well beyond pilots.
Missy.
And for young students and Anchorage parents who might be listening, we actually offer an aviation maintenance and an aviation technology program that lives right inside the UAA Merrillfield campus. And our students are directly connected to the UAA programs. And there's a seamless transition for students. Our aviation maintenance students can earn up to 18 college credits.
Wow.
Before they even enter into UAA's program. And so those opportunities can begin as early as high school for students.
That's fantastic. We have an email question from Charles, or actually Lou in Nome. Lou asks, are any of the classes doing anything to help students manage their personal finances, understanding loans, retirement insurance, budgeting, or other aspects of creating a viable way to stay solvent? Is that addressed, Denise?
It is. A number of our classes at UAA do, but the one I'll highlight is actually one that's taught here in the CTC of UAA. It's called University Studies. And while it's mostly about forming an academic plan and setting career goals, it also talks about all kinds of life management skills, personal finance, making decisions, work-life balance, figuring out what you want to do, where you want to live, and how you want to get there.
And does that start in high school, Missy?
Yeah, it does. And we have a variety of classes in high school. We have personal finance classes, as well as we have good partnerships with organizations like Junior Achievement. And also we have events that our industry partners come in and do a financial reality fair that different credit unions and banks sponsor and come in. And when students are juniors and seniors, they have this financial reality fair. And we find a variety of ways to infuse those lessons into high school.
All right, we're going to take one more quick call here. Roger is in Juneau. Hi, Roger. Hello?
Hello?
Yes. Hi, Roger. Can you get to your question quickly? We're getting low on time.
Okay. Alaska Methodist University, I'm a 1970 graduate, and these questions and things you're exploring are nothing particularly new to a student body, but I'd like to know how Alaska Pacific University fits into this mix now that there's a great reopening, rebirth of Native awareness here in this part of the country. So I'd like to know how they fit into all this.
All right. Thanks for the question, Roger. I see Denise nodding. So yep. What's the partnership like?
There's a great partnership between the university and APU. A lot of that revolves around key programs that don't necessarily fall in the community and technical college, but in healthcare, for example, and in business, there are a number of opportunities for students at APU to get the connections with industry and all of that, just like what we've been talking about for the CTC programs. And there's a lot of cooperation with UAA as well.
The final question is going to be from an email question that we got in. This is from a listener who says they attended the UAA graduation ceremony on Sunday. It included the Community and Technical College commencement. The dean of CTC kept repeating how directly employable the graduates are. And so the question is, how many graduates are employed directly out of college? And they're asking for some specifics about culinary arts, welding, aviation, construction. In just a few seconds, can you
give
us some of that?
I can give some highlights. So in diesel technology, culinary arts, and aviation maintenance technology, we have data that shows that of those graduates who are seeking a job, because sometimes people aren't, but for those who are seeking a job, 100% thereabouts are employed within 6 months of graduation. All the rest of our programs, it's well over 90%.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much to both of you for being here. Denise Runge is the dean of UAA's Community and Technical College, and Missy Fraze is the acting director of career and technical education for the Anchorage School District. We'll have some links on our website to information about these programs. That's at alaskapublic.org. And you can go there and check out the program and the audio from today's show if you missed any part of it. Thanks to our engineer, Ammon Swenson, our producer, Zakiya McCummings, and Abby Collins on phones. I'm Lori Townsend. We'll be back next week. Thanks for listening.
It's dust season in Alaska, and dust is a real health hazard, especially for our kids and elders. Dust can cause respiratory problems, coughing and sneezing, chest pain, and make it more difficult to breathe. Dust can trigger traffic accidents and interfere with subsistence activities. And while we can't do away with dust, we can help keep it down by slowing down and remembering to cover our loads when we're hauling dirt or gravel. Dust is air pollution. Driving fast on unpaved roads creates dust, so please slow down. This message sponsored by the Department of Environmental Conservation.
This program is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400. This is Alaska Public Media.